First impressions can take only 6 seconds to make, but if you're neurodivergent, those quick judgments about you can be misleading.
Because of most people's ignorance around learning disabilities, people think it means you're intellectually incapable.
I'm not Rain Man. Every autistic person isn't Rain Man.
I thought I was talking to people who understood dyslexia and ADHD, but they did not.
They freaked out and were like, well, if you've got Tourette's, if it's going to be a problem, then we can just fire you and get someone else.
I'm Carolyn Keel, and I host Beyond 6 Seconds, a podcast where neurodivergent people share their lives and advocacy.
One of my goals is making autism not something that's scary.
I really want to help people understand dyspraxia a little bit better.
Get the real life of Tourette syndrome out there. Stop thinking we were nothing but a joke.
Let's shatter misconceptions and celebrate neurodiversity together. Listen at beyond6seconds.net or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast involves topics such as violence, sex, and mental illness. If this might disturb you or those around you, please reconsider. It's okay. Privacy and confidentiality have been protected, with personal information removed when possible. If you ever feel unsafe or suicidal, please call your local crisis center, emergency services, or national hotline. In the U.S., the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. You matter.
Hey, this is Kate. If you have spent any time on social media lately, especially Twitter, you may be aware, I hope you're aware, I was aware, that things have gotten weird. Things have gotten real weird. First of all, with Elon Musk buying Twitter as his own personal little playground, and then with it turning out that there are other options and people are scattering to the wind. And a lot of us are kind of sitting around going, wow, he's making some whole decisions, isn't he? That's, wow. I'm trying to be as polite as I can about the what the hell is this guy doing feeling that I think a lot of us had. And there were legitimately some days in December where I thought Twitter's about to completely collapse, just all the way disappear, collapse, die, burn to the ground. Which, fine, you know, nothing's irreplaceable, but there were some accounts that I really enjoyed, that I liked following. I felt like they had interesting things to say, or they did single things that I thought were funny or fun or insightful or amazing or just so horrible you had to slow down and watch them. That was a certain specific podcast host that we won't go into. But anyway, in the happier side of things, I realized there are some people that I only see on Twitter because I don't use Instagram a ton and I'm using Facebook less and less, and I may lose track of these people. And one of my favorite things about Twitter is that it's pretty easy and straightforward to reach out and say, hey, do you want to come on my show? And they either say sure, or they say no thanks, or they ignore me, and we go from there. So I send out a bunch of DMs to total strangers saying, hi, before Twitter implodes, do you want to come play? And almost all of them said, sure, why not? Each time causing a little explosion in my brain. And so the first one that I'm going to play is a guy named Sean Morrow. He's a journalist with More Perfect Union. He describes what that is and what its goal is, and he does it better than I will. So I'll let him do that. But he's the guy. So when I describe to my husband, hey, here's who's coming on, sometimes he knows who I'm about to talk to, and other times, not at all. And in this case, I was like, oh yeah, here's this guy, and this is what he does. And Willem's just sort of like, yeah, okay, great. sure, whatever. And then I was like, yeah, he's the guy with the Eli Lilly free insulin tweet. And Willem knew exactly who I meant, which was pretty cool. Like, anytime my family looks at me and nods their head in legitimate awareness, like, oh, right, yeah, you do a thing out in the world. That's a win for me. So that's who you're hearing from today. And Sean does such a better job than I do at articulating why monopolies are a bad idea and why we need to be more progressive in thought. Because I tend to think on a micro level, on an individual level, that's, I think, the psychologist in me. Sean knows how to see the bigger picture. And so I buckle up because I'm scrambling myself this whole time to just keep up, just hear what he's saying and take it in and not sound like an idiot in response. And I think I do an okay job, and I know he does an okay job. So, you know, you may not be into politics, and that's fair. You don't have to be. But I still really liked this conversation, so I hope you'll listen. Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss.
My name's Sean. I'm a writer for the Classroom series at More Perfect Union, which is a nonprofit newsroom kind of working to elevate the voice of working people, fight corporate greed, and report the news kind of with that angle in mind.
And let me just be real super clear right up front, because I had somebody ask, you're not Jorts.
I am not Jorts.
Okay,
no.
Okay. Just being clear, because yes. I'm not that cool. So, you know,
yeah.
I might be cool, but
the cat on Twitter. No, that's not
the
me.
Orange cat. Yeah, it's not you. Okay, cool. I was trying to explain to my husband last night who I was recording with today, and at first he was like, "I don't know what you're talking about," and I said, "Yeah, you know, the guy that broke Twitter."
Mm-hmm.
And he immediately knew who I meant. So can you tell that story?
Yeah, of course. So as I'm sure a lot of your audience knows, Elon Musk, the tech billionaire, purchased Twitter recently with an intent to change it into the platform of his whims. One of the first steps he took there was he had a problem with the verification system, which is where anyone from celebrities to politicians to members of the media can get the little, you know, blue check mark next to their name. I believe Elon kind of saw this as a status symbol more than what it truly is, which is verification of one's identity. So he announces that anyone can buy this blue check mark by subscribing to Twitter Blue for $7.99 a month, meaning anyone can get this little thing that says verified next to their name. Now, when he first announced it, everyone was like, that's a terrible idea. That's not going to work. This is going to be incredibly problematic. But he pushed forward anyway. And so as soon as it launched, you saw people posting like, account as President Biden saying like, I can suck my own dick or whatever, or like Super Mario flipping the bird at the camera, just really kind of absurd stuff. But the next day after it had been around for a day and it was still seemed chaotic, I was literally just hanging around my house bored. And I decided to like make an account that would had some kind of political meaning. And I had been thinking about drug pricing a lot. So I literally just Google top insulin manufacturers. Cause I didn't even know that these top three. I see Eli Lilly. I take an old account I had. It has to be an account that's been open for 90 days. I had an old Mothman for Senate parody account that was old enough to be included. Changed that all to Eli Lilly, and I just sent out one tweet, which was, we are excited to announce insulin is free now. That I watched in my, you know, sitting in my living room, watched it start to blow up. And by the end of the day or by the end of the next day, the company had commented and said, we are, you know, that wasn't us. We never said that. Twitter announced that they were changing their verification policy, and you had now had to say parody in your username instead of just in the bio, which I had liberally covered my bio with the word parody. And as of now, today's, you know, what, December 11th, this was mid-November. the Twitter verification program has not returned.
I deeply appreciate the idea that I'm sitting home. I got nothing going on. There's a lot of chaos going on. So I'm going to add
to the chaos. Jump in. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if I would have gone, like, I think there's a brilliance in choosing insulin specifically because, you know, like the Biden can suck his own dick or Super Mario or whatever. Those are clearly false. Mm-hmm. You went subtle.
Right. So what I would argue there actually is with regards to satire and parody law is that kind of the whole point is that it is absurd. It is just as absurd as the president of the United States tweeting out that he can suck his own dick that a pharmaceutical company would ever do anything altruistic. I think those things are equally unlikely to happen and equally absurd when it comes down to it. I think that that's kind of the point I was trying to make, is it's just as absurd. And it also was putting them in a tight spot where they had to, you know, when you say you are somebody, even if it's clearly a satire, and say you're going to do a nice thing, the person's going to look like a real jerk when they have to come out and say that they're not doing the nice thing.
And my understanding as of today, December 11th, is that the clearest feedback that we've gotten from Eli Lilly is, we're going to look into it.
Yeah, I believe the exact quote was, this was a week later, it was some kind of like a big pharma summit they were at. And, you know, this guy, the CEO of Eli Lilly, sitting on stage with someone who I'm sure he was presuming would just be throwing him softball stuff. But, you know, they had been in the news all week. So they had to ask, what about this fake tweet? And I believe his words were something along the lines of, like, it highlights the need of lowering the cost of our product. And I think it's interesting that he said it maybe highlights, I believe. And that's, again, where I look into it. But I think it's important he used the word cost. He didn't say the word price. He said the word cost, which means that they're still worried about protecting their profit margins. If this is their cost and this is their price, they want to lower the cost so they can lower the price instead of just lowering the price and cutting into their price. Sorry, I forgot this is audio and I was doing a visual thing with my hands.
Joke. It's fine. It works.
Yeah. It's they could just decrease their margins a little bit. They could decrease what's returned to shareholders. I'm not a full-blown communist. I don't think they should be doing this just, you know, for completely for free. But there should be a little less priority put onto returning value to shareholders.
Well, you know, and it's interesting for me. So I am myself not diabetic, but I have epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't cope well with the first epilepsy medication that I was given. It's called Keppra, and it's one of the cheaper epilepsy meds because it's 1,000 years old and there's no patent on it. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that kind of thing. And so that's all well and good. And I would still be taking it, except it landed me back in the hospital, which is, you know, arguably not good. And so the medication that I'm on is really expensive. Like, I'm privileged enough that I have private health insurance. And so it only costs $120 a month, mm-hmm. which, let's sit with the only of that for a second, you know, but without that, and there have been a couple of times where, like, when we've been changing jobs or whatever, where I've walked in and, you know, CVS or Walgreens and said, hey, I need at least a partial fill until I can afford a full fill. And I asked once, I was like, just out of curiosity, how much would it cost me to just pay out of pocket for this?
Yeah.
And their answer was $3,000 a month. And so in an alternate timeline, I'm still dead on the floor in CVS right now. And so it's like, I agree. Drugs cost a thing to make. They cost an amount to make. And
it's mostly loaded into the research stage. You know, like once they figure it out, it's pretty generally, I don't want to make a generalization, but generally pretty cheap to produce. There's a lot of put in the research stage. But a lot of that research stage is covered by federal grants and things like that. These are things that we're already paying for. You know, the American people are already paying for these things in a lot of ways. And you can now argue whether or not this is fortunate or not. America, by how much we're paying, is kind of subsidizing it for the rest of the world as well. Because say some more with universal health care, when their medication's cheaper, it's not just because the government is paying for it. The government's paying less to the pharmaceutical company than the American citizen is paying for the pharmaceutical company. So in part, Americans are subsidizing it for the rest of the world, which argues is a good thing, you know, because we're, you know, have a higher GDP and easier lives than a lot of the world. But But yes, that number is absolutely insane, and it has very little to do with how much the drug costs to produce.
Well, and I kept struggling with, like, why is this so expensive? Because when I started taking it, it had been on the market, I want to say 7 years, give or take.
Yeah.
And I was like, and so I went down the rabbit hole of, it turns out you can effectively copyright new medications.
Yes.
And so this drug was at the time considered a controlled substance, not unlike morphine or something being a controlled substance. But the difference is morphine is a controlled substance because it is addictive and it, you know, frankly, feels good, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a thing. We have to protect people from killing themselves with it. The one that I'm on was a controlled substance because it still had this patent, this copyright on it. And that patent expired last year. And so suddenly we went from $3,000 a month without insurance to it would only, and again, you know, the visual quotes only be like $500 a month.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like something about treating a corporation like an artist, where you get paid for the scarcity of your work and you get paid for the artistry. Like, no, this is keeping me from dying on the floor of CVS.
Yeah. It's a need, not a want. Yeah. And I think that, it has to do with the patent exactly, because if only one person makes something, they're naming the price. But if multiple people are making something, there's competition. You have to, you know, your competitor is making the same exact thing for a lower price. You got to meet that or else no one's going to buy from you. So that's why these companies fight tooth and nail to keep those patents going. Drug patents go generic, I believe, after 20 years is when they officially open up, which sounds like a long time. Some are shorter. You mentioned seven, some are shorter. And so in order to get these patents to last, they make like these slight little changes. So it's technically a new patent when they're really not doing any difference. And then that's what, you know, the AMA or other organizations will recommend is the new drug. And the old drug becomes obsolete. So they can't even go generic on that. And that's how it keeps the price up.
And I talk to a lot of people who are out of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
one way or the other, and trying to explain to them that our drugs are like books, that they're inventions, they're patented. It's hard for them because they just look at it as, it's the American healthcare system. And I'm like, well, see, but here's the thing. That's a facet of the American healthcare system, but we're ignoring so many other facets that are toxic and terrible and awful. And you just managed to ping off one.
Yeah, it's really only one of them. There's many, many, many problems. I mean, the lack of universal healthcare is super interesting because, again, that goes deeper than just the government's paying for it for you. The government's paying less. That's why these, you know, pharmaceutical companies fight so hard against universal healthcare. Because, you know, theoretically, they could be fine with it because they'll still be selling it. Their customer will just be the government instead of people. But why aren't they okay with it? And that's because within a universal healthcare system, it would be single payer, which means you only have one possible customer. And if you only have one possible customer, that customer is naming the price. If you live in a town where everyone has celiac disease, the one guy who doesn't have celiac disease and you have a bagel place, like, you have to cater to that guy. You have to, you know, he's deciding how much he's willing to pay for bagels. And he's making those decisions. And if there's a bunch of bagel places, but like, yeah, it's only the government. So that's like just another part of it is it's not about whether or not we have like our tax pay money is paying for people's healthcare. It's about because it's not what that means in a domino effect and keeping these things so expensive.
It's all wild. Like, you know, so I broke my back in 2014. Bad idea. Don't do it. But so I've been on disability since then. But the last job that I had for several years before that was as a crisis clinician, which is the person, if you show up in the emergency room and say that you are suicidal, homicidal, having a bipolar episode, psychotic, at some states, drug overdose, that kind of thing. You go through a medical check and then you talk to me.
Yeah.
And I help figure out like, okay, what next? And it's like it's an open secret, I guess, in the world. Like it was part of the training that we gave to new clinicians was if you're not okay with lying, then you can't have this job.
Yeah.
Like, you can't cope with this job. I lied to insurance companies on the daily.
Of course.
Because sometimes that's the only way you're going to get somebody admitted to a psychiatric hospital, because that's what they need, even if they're not going to die tonight.
Right.
That's the care that they need, because let's maybe not get them to the point where they're going to die tonight.
Yeah.
And talking to people, and you know, the in like, you know, friends of mine in Canada talk about how long it takes to get to see specialists. And I'm like, yes. Yeah, so see, it's not one or the other is ideal and better. But I don't know, I guess as an American, I have a sense that other countries are more transparent.
Yeah, I think that is the case. Their system is definitely more transparent. What money is going into research and development or marketing is totally different. Like, you can't just market drugs, and that's a lot of where a lot of the money that these companies go has. Yeah, a lot of it's completely different.
All of which is wild. Like, it's all, I don't know anyone in the world of mental health care in general, and I've worked in several facets of it myself. I don't know any of them who said, I want to go in to become a business owner.
Yeah.
Now, anybody who says, I want to go in to help people, I kind of side-eye that, like, okay. Often, most of us, myself included, went in because we wanted to figure our own shit out.
Yeah.
You know, but still, I never went in to try and figure out the insurance system or the cost of drugs or what a rebound effect is or what marketing is or the fact that there is such a thing as marketing and that there's a reason why on, say, a... I don't remember the name of the drug now, but there's a drug that's supposed to address social anxiety, and one of its known side effects is explosive diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to say that on the TV commercial.
Yeah.
And like, that's law, that you have to do these things. And all of these things were like, oh, I didn't know what I was getting in myself into at all here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know what you were getting yourself into when you started going down these, like, were you looking for, hey, why does this cost so much? Or like, what led you?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm not a diabetic either. I do have interactions with the medical community in terms of purchasing pharmaceuticals. But it's something that I've heard people talk about a lot. There's recent policy in the Inflation Reduction Act. Originally, there was going to be a $35 cap on insulin for everybody. And it got shrunk down to only applying to Medicare. So only Medicare is there this cap? So it was kind of fresh in the news from that. And it's like, why can't there be a cap? Why isn't that? Yeah, like, free might be a little much, but why can't there be a cap? And that's part of the absurdity. Part of my job was, you know, working for More Perfect Union is studying like corporate greed and looking at the mechanisms by which these large corporations ostensibly transfer money from the people to themselves. There's ways that that's what they're doing. They're taking as much money as possible from the people, from the working people of America. And this is just one of those mechanisms. And what I work in is trying to help people understand those mechanisms. So this thing was just a tweet I fired off like by myself, you know, and then did a little bit on it with work. But that's, you know, what we try to do is make people understand the mechanisms by which these people that you might respect as billionaires are really siphoning money away from working people. And just because everyone understands they do it, but no one understands necessarily the little methods, in the same way that people might think like, oh, money in politics is bad, the Koch brothers are bad, or George Soros is bad, on whatever side you're on. But the question is like, do you really buy a law? Is that how it works? No, it's more complicated than that. So it's a matter of looking at these ways that these people are, you know, taking this money.
So I have adult children as well as children. And my eldest is 22, and they believe, which I think is cute, that they've discovered capitalism. They've discovered corporate greed, as though the rest of us had no idea. And we've just been floating through the world like that. But you know, there is something to be said, I think, for kids, and for me, anybody under 30 is a kid to a degree, because I'm old and cranky right now, being more aware of this concept of corporate greed and capitalism and that sort of thing. Do you have that similar sense, or do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it might have just been the pandemic. It might have been earlier. It might have been in part due to how successful the Sanders campaign was in 2016. But there's something where I think there's a lot more class consciousness these days than there was, you know, 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago. A lot more people are understanding of things like how much exactly you owe your boss, how much you should be giving to your job. People understanding that the accumulation of wealth by billionaires is, wealth transfer from everyone else. And these are things that if you're following politics, you knew all along. But I feel like the average person is way more aware of these things than they were in the past, which is hopefully going to possibly usher in change. Like with pharmaceuticals, for example, like 82 or 83% of people consider drug pricing to be absurd or some strong word like that. Not that many people agree on anything. It's like, you know, like the last time that many Americans agreed on something was like 9/11 was bad or something. You know what I mean? Like no one ever agrees like that. And everyone agrees that pharmaceutical prices are overdone. And that's, I think, a big part of like people are waking up.
You know, and that's, it's been interesting because a lot of the people that I'm watching wake up, like my oldest kid, for instance, first I'm seeing the anger.
Mm-hmm. It starts with anger, absolutely.
Which I get, you know, it's got to start from somewhere. Something's got to make them want to change. I hope that it moves to action. And I don't know what that action is. I don't think politically in the same way. Like I try and read and learn and vote, but I don't understand the political machine from a big picture.
Right.
So what do people do if they want to change something?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, voting isn't always enough. But I think a big part of it is just, I know awareness seems like a cop-out, but having people know how these systems work and possibly try to start building other systems. People, you know, 83% of people being mad that pharmaceuticals overpriced hasn't done anything. So there's a matter of figuring out what, like how to change these things. Because if you're on insulin, you can't boycott insulin, you know, like you'll die. So it's just a matter of figuring out what the right actions are. But I think this step of how many people having more class consciousness definitely is one of the first steps. We're seeing definitely more progressive people being entering into the Senate and in the House, like a John Fetterman winning Senate in Pennsylvania. It's like he's pretty progressive. He supports Medicare for all. He supports complete legalization of marijuana. A lot of things that, you know, where that aren't necessarily that popular in the House or in Congress. So I think there are these changes happening. And then it's like at a certain point, like the 83% is going to have enough power to stop that small group that wants to keep these prices high for their profit margins.
Do you feel like you've created sort of a niche for yourself in pharmaceutical pricing now, or and you can tell me to not ask as well, of course, but do you have other areas that we should be looking at the same time?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, pharmaceutical pricing is just one of the areas I cover. I would say that like generally what I cover is this larger corporate greed. And a lot of that ends up focusing on monopolies and consolidation. So a big part of the insulin pricing thing is that it's three companies that make it. They make 90% of the market, which means they, you know, they do coordinate. They're able to control the prices. But the same thing is true, say, of meat processing. There's several, for most meat you'll get in the supermarket, it all comes from the same few companies. That means they determine prices, not only the price that you, the consumer, is paying, but the price that they pay to the farmers. And that's what leads to a lot of farmers, you know, like going out of business and not being able to be small farmers. A colleague of mine is working on a piece of this farmer who, due to consolidation and specifically from the Cargill Corporation, his farm is going under. He has to sell all his cows. He's attempted to take his own life. It's super dark, and it's because of just a few companies completely owning things, and the consolidation goes across industries. I don't have the numbers of this on the top of my head, but even just since like the 80s, there's way fewer companies, and it's all smaller, you know, way more large companies, and they're able to control things. That applies from things that are, you know, needed to live, like medicine and food, to something quote unquote silly like concert tickets tickets. Ticketmaster has a monopoly over all of live entertainment, basically, which means that that's why they're allowed to charge you a $40 fee or $100 fee to buy a $20 ticket. And then it's not only the consumer getting screwed, it's the artist getting screwed. Even a Bruce Springsteen or a Taylor Swift is also getting screwed by this. And it's like, sure, you don't necessarily have pity for Bruce Springsteen or Taylor Swift, but there's lots of small artists that are being screwed by it. Lots of people that work at venues. And it really does come down just to this huge consolidation. We're working on a piece now about something that people don't realize is a monopoly, but there's something that you cannot get rid of in America that's impossible to get rid of, that is only run by one organization, and that's football. The NFL has a monopoly on football. You can't just start your own football league. There's like the XFL or something, and those aren't popular, or the college football. And that's why they can get away with, basically sacrificing the players' brains with CTE, because you can't get rid of football and they're the only ones doing it. I think it's mostly about corporate greed, and a huge part of that is this consolidation, is monopolies.
I think a lot of people focus so much on, look, I'm just trying to get through my day. Why should I care about this stuff? But the answer is, you shouldn't just be trying to get through your day.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff has to change, and it's going to be a lot of work. But do you really want to spend the rest of your 40, 60, 80, 100 years just getting through your days?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just about empathy. It's about yourself too. It can be selfish. The reason that obviously inflation is real, but a big part of the reason of prices on things like meat going up is because these companies know they can get away with it. They know, because of the consolidation, they can raise the price. So they're saying it's from inflation, but again, their profit margins are staying the same or growing. And it's going to get to a point when people can't afford the things they want anymore. I have a decent job and live in New York, and I still am like, oh, I can't afford chicken breasts anymore. I have to get mostly chicken thighs because it's cheaper. And it's like, I don't have that pure protein. I'm bringing in the fat or whatever. It's like, there's, these prices are going up. And again, inflation's real, but it's not just inflation. You can read the earnings reports of these companies where they brag to their investors and say, hey, we used under the cover of inflation, we were able to raise prices more than we ended up having to raise costs. So they increased their profit margins and blamed it on inflation. And that's, put to the public. And then they can get away with that for that reason. So yeah, it's like, you can't ignore it at a certain point, because it's going into your pocket. It's going, it's affecting you.
And that's what I've been watching my kid go through, my eldest. So my younger two are 10 and 12. My older two are 18 and 22. And the 18-year-old is staying here with us in our house while they're in school. That's fine. That's the agreement. That's their job. The 22-year-old had intended to move out 2-3 years ago, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, pandemic.
Yeah.
So they only just moved out like 2 months ago. And the texts that I'm getting from them now, of the, holy shit, everything is expensive and I'm not getting paid enough.
Yeah.
And like, you're right. Like, I don't know I legitimately don't know the answer to how to fix it, but you're right that everything is expensive. And I tell this story to my kids, and I don't know if they don't believe me or they just don't care. Both are equally likely. But I remember being about five. I'm 45 now. I remember being about 5 years old and going to McDonald's with my parents and having my father say to me, someday I want you to remember that all three of us, your mother, you and I, went to McDonald's and got complete meals with a drink, and I paid with a $5 bill and got change back.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, yes, okay, great. Can I have a French fry? Like, at the time, that was as smart as I was, because, five. But, minimum wage is an issue.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And cost of things are an issue. I'm watching people don't even notice. I feel like, numbers get scary for people. And so I watch people just 10, 15, 20 cents on the price of a Happy Meal. And they're like, well, it is what it is and no big deal. And they're income isn't going up by that much.
Yeah.
And so it is that, it is a big deal. It does.
Absolutely. It's, yeah, it's like, say, you know, you go to an old timey, like a luncheonette and you get a hamburger for a nickel, right? Or even at a McDonald's, you might get a hamburger for a nickel. Like, I feel like that's the stereotype of the sign, or a hamburger is a nickel or a dime. Even say it's a dime. And then today that same hamburger is $5. You're not making 250, inflation's real, but you're not making 250 times more than you were then. If someone's salary was $20,000 in 1970, that's doing that same job isn't going to be, well, what is that? That's like over $1 million, like that's over $1 million. That's not how it works. But the price of these things went way up. The same is true of, say, rent. Rent has gone up significantly faster than wages. And it's not just minimum wages for, you know, like salary people with good jobs. People that are like, you know, it's like a consultant or something is not making that big of a gap as the price that things have gone up. And that's, again, because they can get away with it. But it's also, how long can they get away with it? Because people are noticing, people are mad, people are suffering, and people are becoming more aware. And it's like, I don't know what those people are going to be able to do. But it's when you get a lot of people mad, things happen.
Something's got to break.
Yeah.
Something's got to break. And that's one of the things that always baffles me, I guess, is that with a lot of systems, there's like a built-in breaking, a load-bearing weight, mm-hmm. that's built in. There's a breaking point. There's some sort of mechanism in place that's meant to allow us to break,
right,
without destroying the system. I don't feel like, and maybe I just don't understand it well enough, but I don't feel like our politics or economy have that.
Yeah, I don't think that trip is that exists. There's nothing to stop the, you know, a few billionaires from taking all the money. There's no the founding fathers didn't say, like, just like how they, you know, we have provisions in place to prevent fascism, which aren't going that well. And those are things like, you know, even though I might not agree with how loose it is, something like the Second Amendment that was put there theoretically to prevent, you know, so that you can fight against the state. Obviously, a lot of people have gone way too far for it, but there's no version of that to protect against, financial consolidation of a few people having all the money. There's just there's nothing put in place to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So what do we do?
You know, I don't know. I get asked these, I look and I see what the problem is. I'm not necessarily someone that can give you solutions. The solutions are there, but it's very, very difficult. Like these things, like, you know, if I was saying, I'd just say, let's get universal healthcare, but there's very powerful people that don't want that to happen. I would say we should have stronger antitrust laws. We should be able to break up monopolies easier. Again, there's very powerful people that don't want that to happen. It's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, it used to be a conspiracy people to talk to conspiracy theory to talk about global elites. It's something that, like, I'm Jewish, but it gets coded as almost anti-Semitic to say global elites. But there are people that are, you know, billionaires that are kind of controlling these things that you don't even realize they're controlling, but are to affect their bottom line, which is kind of absurd. Like, I don't want to name any names here because this is like just research, but there's corporations where they know that an exported good or an imported into America good is better than what they produce in America. So they lobby for sanctions against those countries so that their product can't get in. And you don't think of it as like, a company that's making one product, why they would be meddling in international relations, but they're meddling for those reasons. And it creates a huge problem. And it's just a matter of like calling them on their bullshit, I think.
Well, and I think, and I did put you on the spot there, and I apologize, because I don't think that any one person should both identify the problem and identify the solution. I think it needs to be more thinking by committee and less consolidation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what the problem is like how, once you have a certain amount of power, it's easier to get more. If you look at, say, again, in like agriculture, it's like, a company like once they own, you know, like the grain elevators, and then they own the trains, it's like then it's easier for them to get take control of the next thing. So it's just a matter of like breaking these things up. And if it was like one piece of policy that could fix a lot, obviously monopolies are illegal, but that's not enough. We need stronger antitrust policies, and law enforcement's never great, but more power to the FTC, more power to the groups that can help break up these monopolies and make sure that we don't have barons, you know, like we had this problem before and we're like, no, we can't have this anymore. Like we had antitrust. But it's, you know, we backslid a little bit. Same thing is true with like even like tech or something. Like there's a problem when there's so few people that are controlling what has something like a Twitter or even pre-Elon Musk, a Twitter or a Facebook is they're not really companies anymore. They're more like utilities. You know, you need like, but I guess not anymore because Facebook's kind of, you know, gone downhill a little bit. There was a point when you kind of needed Facebook. You needed Facebook to log into things. You needed Facebook to know when people's birthdays are. So it's like all a kind of monopoly and it's like kind of forcing their way into your life by becoming necessary.
Well, you just said an interesting thing, you know, about law enforcement not being great. And I want to be clear with my own personal view is that law enforcement with guns is bad.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't want law enforcement with guns. I'm literally have worked in the law enforcement system, the criminal justice system. I've worked in prisons and the like. And even then, I didn't want them to have guns, you know, because honestly, people who are seeking a role that allows them to carry a gun more than a third of their life make me nervous.
Yeah, they're generally angrier people. Yeah, I mean, we live in a very different world. If instead of beat cops having guns, people, the like federal officers in charge of like campaign finance fraud had guns, or, you know, the SEC had guns, I think we'd be living in a very bad world. If, you know, if like SEAL Team 6 was more like, hey, let's go get those oil executives. They're destroying the world. That's not what I'm recommending, but we live in a very different world if that's how we use the violence of the state. If the state's going to be violent anyway, like,
that's the thing that people, because it's really all about me, people have asked before, why did I go into forensic psychology instead of profiling?
Sure.
Because they're kind of similar, just different timelines. Profiling is going out and finding the person. Forensic psychology is talking to them after you've caught them. And my answer, which I've said enough that it sounds pat, even though it's not, is I didn't want to be a cop. Mm-hmm. I didn't, and profilers have to be cop, like FBI profilers have to be special agents for some period of time before they are allowed to enter the BAU. And even then they still carry guns. And I'm like, that's not it.
Yeah.
For me, like, that's not, so I'm okay. You know, and I think that I find the phrasing, for instance, of defund the police to be too complicated, I guess, for some people to grasp, because what they're hearing is get rid of all police. And it's like, no, we need rules and we need people willing to effect change in laws and the like, but they don't need guns. And I'm outside of Boston, and when I started doing crisis work up here, it was in the late, what is it called? The aughts?
You know, people say aughts.
that, whatever the kids say these days. And in there. And at that time, when I started the job as crisis clinician, the only way you could see someone was in the ER.
Right.
Or maybe in an office setting. And then it was kind of a big deal while I was working that we started going to people's homes to do the same job, but without the ER copay.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal. And it was so hard to convince cops to call us. If they get a 911 call saying we're hearing, you know, a melee happening at our neighbor's house or whatever, please, yes, call us, but then don't show up.
Yeah.
You know, showing up with a gun on your hip and the flashing lights does nothing to de-escalate. It doesn't, you know, and that's so I want them to do cop things. There are cop things that I want them to have their jobs and do cop things. I don't want them to do mental health things.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they're not doing, like, there's the things that we'd all agree that we need cops for, like, say, taking down an active shooter. That's when they don't, like, at Uvalde in Texas, they just waited outside. They let children be massacred because they were scared.
And this is what I'm saying. It's like, go ahead and do the cop things.
Yeah.
And but the problem
there's one guy you're allowed to shoot and no one's gonna be mad at you.
Exactly.
And they didn't do it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's why and that's the thing, is that like I'm a pretty smart person. Hmm. And yet I don't know the answers. I know certain answers. And mine might be wrong. Mine are coming from one perspective. But I feel like we're so busy telling everybody else why they're wrong. And being, you know, raised as a woman in our society, I had to unlearn a lot of apologies, mm-hmm. and a lot of deference that I think a lot of people from different marginalized groups have to learn.
Yeah, of course.
And have to learn that it's okay to step up and say your truth, but that all of that gets in the way. And so finding the answer is like, okay, we got to get all this shit out of the way first. Like if you're going to clean your room, the first thing you have to do is get rid of all of the trash, and then you can reorganize the furniture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The big changes need to be made before we can. Yeah. There's like steps that need to be taken. But there's a lot of people that are determined to keep the status quo. I mean, the current police force is there to keep things the way they are, to keep the people that are in power, to, you know, I'm not going to say that the you know, the police is like a white supremacist force, but they're there to keep a world where white people are in power, or white middle class people are in power. They're there to enforce that, and that's not what they say they're for, but that's what they're for. And the people that want to keep that really want to keep it, so they'll shut down anything. I'm sure you saw how crime was a big issue in the most recent election in New York. You know, there was people that New York almost had a Republican governor because of how many people are talking about crime and worried about crime. But it's like, it's not a real, it's those numbers are inflated. That was entirely a political issue. Things are the same as they've always been. People are using numbers saying that murders are up because murders are up from when we were in isolation. Yeah, of course murders are up. People are out. They're back to normal. Like, so that people that's used to keep power structures in place, just like any of this corporate greed stuff is used to keep power structures in place. Part of the reason medicine's expensive is probably part of a system that is to keep people working, to keep people as part of society, to keep people as part of the capitalist machine. Because, you know, if you need insulin, you're gonna have to work to get you have insurance. Insurance is tied to a job, and you're not gonna want to leave your job, so you might stay at a shitty job. It's all just kind of tied together to like the people that are in power wanting to keep that status quo, because of course, if you're in power, you're going to want to keep the systems that are in power. It's the same reason that people fight something like diversity initiatives. It's because deep down, that white person fighting diversity initiatives knows that they're mediocre, and that the only thing they have that is keeping them in a place of power is their whiteness, is the fact that we live in a racist society. And they won't admit that, but they know that deep down. They know they're not good enough at their job to compete if it is opened up. It's when people when people talk about immigrants, quote unquote, taking their jobs, a comedian who's very canceled, so I don't want to quote him, but I'm just going to steal his joke and not feel bad about it. It's like, if you're really worried about someone with no connections who doesn't know English coming here and taking your job, then you're probably not very good at your job. You should be better at your job. And so that's what it comes down to, is people just wanting to protect the status quo that keeps them in power. And that's the same for police and as it is with consolidation and monopolies and corporate greed.
I always hated the board game Monopoly growing up. Hated it. And for a totally valid reason. That reason being that my father kicked my ass at it every single time. And, you know, after a while, that just stops being fun. And now I think I understand more about why I hated it, which is pretty cool. You know, I was right all along. The real enemy is inside the house, right? Or whatever the quote is. Somebody smarter than me will know it. So, Sean, thank you for coming to play. It was so fun and engaging. And, you know, I always get a little nervous when I'm talking to somebody who knows a lot of stuff that I don't know anything about, because I'm like, I don't always have the fastest processing speed. There are times where my brain just says nope. But I felt like you did such a good job of letting me hang in there with you and push some boundaries and hang back at other times. And That was great. So, thank you. And thank you guys for listening. I hope you learned some things. I know I learned some things. I'll be back soon. It's December 22nd. I don't know if I'll get something out before Christmas or not. We don't even observe in a Christian sense. And so I might drop something on Christmas itself. I don't know right now. Like, I legitimately am having trouble thinking past this afternoon. Just, it's been a busy couple of weeks, and it's a long story, but I wasn't planning on releasing anything today, and yet here we are. So, in any case, whatever it is that you celebrate, I hope that 2022 was kinder to you than it was to me. It felt like it was an unkind year to a lot of people. I'll definitely release a couple more episodes before January 1st, but just sort of throwing it out there, if preemptive karma is a thing, I hope you catch some positive stuff, because it's been a lot. It's been a struggle, and we could all use a break. You matter.